Die Götterdämmerung. After Siegfried had cut the spear in pieces with Nothung, Wotan returned sadly to Valhalla. Eager for news, all the giants gathered around him, but they were slow to speak when they noticed the broken spear. At last one of them said, "Wotan, what is troubling you? You do not look as happy as you did when you went away." "No, no, no, I am not happy. Happiness will never again be ours. While walking upon the earth, I met Siegfried, the fearless hero. He was then on his way up the mountain to awaken the sleeping Brunhilde. I tried to detain him with my spear, which hitherto has conquered all things. But love was in his heart, and with one blow of his trusty sword, he cut the spear in two pieces. Now I know that our giant power will no longer rule the world, but something stronger will soon reign in its place. Alas, alas, Alberic's curse is coming true." As Wotan was speaking, a cloud crept slowly over the sky. Siegfried and Brunhilde, meantime, were spending the hours happily together. One day Brunhilde called Siegfried to her. "Siegfried, you were indeed brave to kill the dragon. Braver still were you to come through the fire. Are you brave enough now to leave me for a time?" "If you are a true hero, you must go and do more brave deeds. To remain always by my side would be to forget all else. Your trusty sword would rust in its sheath were it never used. And I, too, must learn new courage, for if I truly love you, as I do, I must send you away from me that you may gain new strength." Siegfried listened intently while Brunhilde was speaking. "You are right, Brunhilde. I will go, but you will always be in my thoughts. I shall not stay away long, but I shall not return until I have done some brave deed worthy of your praise." So Siegfried, the hero, dressed in full armor and riding Brunhilde's warhorse, left the mountain and rode through the fire into what was to him a new world. His journey was long, but the warhorse traveled so swiftly that they passed over hundreds of miles in the time it would take us to travel one. Finally, he neared the Rhine, and seeing a boat, he sprang in and called to his horse to follow. He pushed the boat far into the river and sped on. At last he neared a large palace. In this palace there lived a very wicked man who was a friend of Alberic's, and his name was Hagen. Alberic had talked much of the gold, and they had many times discussed the power of the magic helmet and the ring. Hagen was also anxious to gain the ring and the gold. He, like Alberic, cared nothing for love. All his time was spent in thinking how he could get possession of the ring. Yet he knew that Brunhilde had it, and that Siegfried had given it to her. He knew also that she lived on the mountaintop and was surrounded by fire. Again and again did Hagen say, "No one but Siegfried the hero can go through the fire. If I could only lay a plan to capture this youth and make him forget Brunhilde, I could then force him to get the ring for me." One day he sat in the palace door, thinking the same wicked thoughts, when the sound of a horn reached his ears. "It is someone coming up the river," cried he, springing to his feet. "Come, let us go and see who it is," he called to his friends. All hurried down to the river bank, and there they saw a wonderful sight. Siegfried in full armor stood in the bow of the boat. One hand rested on his war horse, while with the other he paddled the boat against the swift current. Hagen and all his friends stood, spellbound, hardly daring to move, for such strength as Siegfried possessed had never been seen by them. "It can be no other than Siegfried, the hero," Hagen said at last. "Such strength belongs to no one else. See, he paddles with one hand against the current. Surely that is Siegfried." Swiftly the boat glided to the shore, and Siegfried sprang out. "Are you not Siegfried?" asked Hagen. "Yes, and I have come from a beautiful mountain to seek new adventures." "Stay with us for a time," said Hagen. "There are many wild animals which ought to be slain, but no one is strong enough to do it. You may hunt all day, and then, When night falls, amuse yourself by listening to fine music and interesting stories. You are most kind to me, replied Siegfried, not dreaming Hagen was such a wicked man. I will accept your generous hospitality. So the boat was drawn up on the shore, and the war horse stepped proudly out, pawing the ground impatiently. What a superb horse! Exclaimed Hagen. And it has wings. Yes, said Siegfried, and his eyes shone with a glad light. He is the swiftest horse in the world, and is very dear to me. Can he fly? Not now. Long, long years ago he had power in his wings, but that was taken away by Wotan before he was given to me. But come, said Hagen, let us go and refresh ourselves with cooling drinks and some food. He led the way, and they entered a bright, sunny room in the palace. There they ate and drank and talked of the country round about and the wild animals that Siegfried would slay. I am eager to be off to the hunt, said Siegfried, as they finished the repast. I will have some of my servants show you the way at once, replied Hagen, if you are anxious to go. Hagen then called his servants and told them to show Siegfried the path to the forest where the ferocious animals lived. Joyfully the brave Siegfried mounted his horse and rode away. Hagen watched him until he had ridden far out of sight. Then, with a scornful leer, he went into a dark room and seated himself in a corner. Now I can think better here in the dark, muttered he to himself. It is no wonder he chose a dark room, for his thoughts were darker than the blackest night. This youth is certainly the bravest hero in the world. How can I surely make him get the ring for me? Just then he heard something, and right before him stood Alberic. Ah, Alberic, you here? Hateful creature, how I loathe you. Why do you not stay where you belong, down in your foul and miserable kingdom? Bah, have I not a right to come into the upper air? And a look of hateful cunning came into his eyes. I am here because of the ring. Why do you not get this Siegfried to get it from Brunhilde? How can I do that when Siegfried all the time thinks of no one but her? Listen, I'm afraid to say it very loud. The only way to do it is to give him a magic drink which will make him forget her. How can I do that? I will mix such a liquid, and when he comes in tired and warm from the hunt, you can say to him, here, brave Siegfried, is a cooling drink which will refresh you. Do you understand? Yes, but how will I get the ring from Brunhilde? Leave that to me, and all will be well. After he has swallowed the magic potion, we will make him take the ring from Brunhilde. And with these words, Alberic vanished. But on the table near where he had been standing was a drinking horn, in which was the magic liquid. Aha! Exclaimed the wicked Hagen. The ring will soon be mine! 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 Alberic thinks I will give it to him, but he is greatly mistaken, and he laughed loudly. Just then Siegfried's silver horn could be heard clear and sweet in the distance. Nearer and nearer it came, and Hagen, seizing the drinking horn, went out to meet him. I have slain one of the wild animals, said Siegfried as Hagen approached him. Then we have much for which to thank you, said Hagen, smiling and bowing in seeming politeness. But before you do anything else, refresh yourself with this cool drink. Thank you, returned Siegfried. This is a very pleasant country about here. I think I will remain for a while. His thoughts then, for the first time, were more of his own pleasure than of his beloved Brunhilde, so carelessly he put the horn to his lips and drank the magic potion. Instantly, Brunhilde was forgotten. After this, a change came over Siegfried. He went no more to the hunt, but stayed in the palace and did nothing but feast and have a good time. As the days went by, he seemed more and more intent upon enjoying himself. So eager was he for his own pleasure that he forgot even his trusty Nothung, and the sword which could do so much hung unused upon the wall of the palace. strange that he could have forgotten that day in the forest when he forged no tongue anew. But everything was forgotten, save his own pleasure. High up on the mountain, surrounded by the magic fire, waited Brunhilde. "Why does not my Siegfried come back to me? The days are long and dreary. The air is close and heavy. Darkness is spreading over the earth. Some evil must have befallen my hero, for he said he would return to me soon, and it has been many long weeks since he went away. I feel that he needs me. I will go to him. Yes, I will go at once," and Brunhilde sprang up. "I will start this very moment." And as the night was falling over the earth, guided by love, Brunhilde walked through the fire to find her Siegfried. Long was her journey. Day and night she traveled, but she never grew weary, for she always heard the voice telling her that Siegfried was in need of her. Early one morning she heard singing and stopped for a moment to listen. Before her was the river Rhine, and there were the Rhine daughters, singing of their lost gold and the ring and the curse upon it. "Why does not someone give the ring back and break the curse?" thought Brunhilde as she stood gazing at the scene before her. Hagen, in the meantime, began to think it was about time for Siegfried to get the ring for him. "I will insist upon having it today. It is early morning now. Before night, the ring shall be mine." So he blew his horn, called his men to him, and sent them in search of Siegfried. In the meantime, however, Siegfried had risen early and wandered about the palace, seeking for some new pleasure. Suddenly his eye caught sight of the forgotten Nothung hanging on the wall. "A hunt will be the best enjoyment for me this morning," said he, as he buckled up the sword. With these thoughts he mounted his horse and rode away, but the horse seemed not to travel so swiftly as it once did. Many times he stopped and dismounted when he heard the noise of an animal, but could get none of them. Finally he stopped the horse and threw himself down on the grass. All at once he heard a bird singing. "I was in a forest too. That was a long time ago. Yes, and it was at that time I forged my Nothung anew, and gave it new life." And Siegfried's face became lighter as memory became clear. "Yes, and I killed the dragon." Mime's heart also was pierced with Nothung. "I also tasted the dragon's blood, and oh, yes, yes, it was then I understood the bird, and she sang of a magic fire, of a sleeping maiden. Yes, and I went through the fire, and..." Suddenly he stopped and sprang up, for he heard something sweeter and dearer to him than all else in the world. His memory had returned to him, and he gave a glad cry. Brunhilde stood before him. "I knew you needed me, so I came to you, my Siegfried," said she. Again he was the brave hero of the other days, even braver than before, for had he not overcome the power of the magic drink? Hagen came suddenly upon them. "The ring, the ring," he shouted. "Give me the magic ring, or you shall both die. Come, men, and take the ring." Noble indeed, then, was Brunhilde, as, drawing her majestic body to its queenly height, with one sweep of her arm she commanded the army of men to stand back. Slowly she drew the ring from her finger and clasped it in her hand. Raising it high above her head, she told all to listen to what she was about to say. Clear and ringing was her voice as she spoke. She told them the sad history of the ring, how Alberic had stolen the gold from the Rhine daughters, its rightful owners, and by giving up love had been able to make a magic ring of it. This ring had cursed all who possessed it. Fafnir, the mighty frost giant, and even Wotan, king of all giants and ruler of the world, had felt its curse. She told them that giant power was about to vanish forever from the earth, that it might give place to love, that in their thirst for gold they had given up all that made the world beautiful, for all was useless without love. No one moved while she was speaking. "The transformation is coming," she cried. A new light shone in her eyes, and with a glad, triumphant shout, she flung the ring back to the Rhine daughters. Instantly, darkness settled over the earth. All was hushed and silent, for everything was changing. For days and days, the sun did not shine. At last, the morning broke. The sun shone brighter than ever before and told his message of love so plainly that no one misunderstood. The birds awoke and caroled glad songs of love, and every mother gathered her little children around her and told them that Valhalla and the giants were no more, that within each heart was a power stronger and purer in its strength than all the giants of Valhalla, and that was the power which would rule forever and ever. And that power, strong and mighty, was love.